the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISO.
Hello and welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode number 137 for Fat Tuesday, February 28th, 2006. I'm Strom Carlson.
Wow, you can't even tell what the hell September is. why would you even think that Fat Tuesday is in September? We're almost
today.
On the opposite side of September. I guess so. Jeez. I'm Black Ratchet, and we have today as our co-host is Useless.
Yo!
He's not Useless, but that's what his handle is.
Useless, that's debatable.
Who's going to be... I don't know. You kind of proved the years. You know what the heck you're talking about, at least.
I know. Strom's met me. Yeah, kind of useless.
No, not useless. You gave me beer. I'm happy about that.
Why don't I get beer?
Because
you
were...
Because
you
didn't come to my city.
Yeah, you didn't come down to TourCon and meet up and get free beer.
Well, you people should have your damn cons on the freaking East Coast. That's what it comes down to. No, can't have
gonna be
cons
on the East Coast.
Dear God.
Make Boston a 2-hour drive away, just like San Diego, and
hey,
I will be there.
I'm going to be trying to go to New York, so if you want to meet me, show up.
Oh, I will hopefully I will be there.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
So, yeah, anyway,
Hopefully I'll be presenting at Coat, hopefully. But anyway,
yeah, we are live tonight.
We're already
again.
Veering off topic and talking about beer and Coke.
Oh yeah. So anyway, we are live again tonight, and if you'd like to call in and berate us about anything you want, our call-in numbers are from within the continental U.S. 888-9-BINREV, toll-free call. So no complaints about I have to. It's a toll call. I can't use the phone. It's free. 888-9-BINREV. If you're calling from outside,
and I
the
assume
US.
Zygmunt's answering the phones.
Yeah, we assume Zygmunt's somewhere there answering the phones. If you're calling from outside the U.S., it's country code 1-213-415-1047. And if you're calling from the U.K., if you're up at this crazy hour in the U.K., it's 0845-646-0102.
We assume that still works.
We think.
Someone should tell us if it doesn't.
Yeah.
I tried to dial it tonight with something that we're going to actually talk about later in one of the emails, and I couldn't get to it. But of course, it was dropping. The service was like, please enter the country code and the number you want to dial.
You know,
it kept on bombing out when I hit the zero.
Let me pick up my home phone and dial this and see what happens.
You're actually going to dial to... Wow, this is dedication right here.
This is dedicated.
Yeah. Well, Strom is sort of dialing up. We have a couple of housekeeping issues from last week. I think this is the first to actually have, like, housekeeping issues to talk about. There apparently is a Linux phone out there. It's available in China. It's tinyurl.com/golfgolfhotelxrayvictor. And it's made in China, and I don't think it's actually released stateside yet, but it runs Linux, and I guess you can do Linux-y things on it.
Yeah, all it did was hang up on me, and it squeaked and it hung up, so I don't know how well it works. It may not work from outside the UK.
I don't know. Well, it's like supposed to be like a special number or something, I guess, from what he was telling me. It's like low rate or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. If it's a special number from within the UK for rate reasons, then obviously it's not going to work from outside, so there's no way I can test it.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, but before we go too off-topic, should we do? Should we jump into our email, or should we announce our tonight's topic first and then jump into the email?
Well, we were talking about the, we have the PDA expertos have both published photos of the Hire smartphone running Access Linux platform. So, I don't know what Access Linux platform is or anything, and the photos they have just looks very weird. Like, it definitely looks like a mock-up with, like, the picture of the screen is, like, photoshopped in. So, who knows? But I guess there are Linux phones out there. And we also have a somewhat semi-live report, you know, via satellite, I guess. The email could have bounced off a satellite. Nat is from last week's episode, NTP versus RIM. Nat says, for anyone who didn't hear the news on Friday, RIM got lucky and the judge had enough sense to not make a ruling just yet. It may happen, but the judge did not give a specific date. Just as soon as reasonably possible. He might be waiting for the patent offices to reject the rest of NTP patents, which will be happening soon. Or maybe he's waiting for a settlement, but I don't think that'll ever happen. So for now, I can still have my CrackBerry and email to Fear Hack the Planets. Natus with the Nikes in the summer and the mink when it's cold. I don't get the reference, but I'm assuming it's
probably some song that I've never heard.
No. Well, yeah, Natus can wear his mink right now because it's probably very cold.
So,
I don't think he actually explicitly mentioned it, but one of BlackBerry's patents got rejected. Was that? I don't remember when that happened. I think
before the show, one at least one had a non-final rejection, and then I don't know if any more.
Yeah,
were
that's moved to be
that
a
time.
Final rejection now.
Ah, okay. Sweet. I think.
I don't know. If Natus was here, he'd know this, but he's not, so we're boned. I don't know. Do you want to go into email first, or do you want to toot your own horn?
I guess I might as well toot my own
horn. Okay, we can toot your own horn now.
No.
So strong.
It's better to leave it for hacking stories, right?
All right, that works.
Okay, for all of you, so don't go away. We'll have excitement and personal
don't
hacking
go away.
Story.
We have big, giant news and stuff.
Yeah, the stuff especially, you know. Our first email is from Voltage X, and he writes, I assume it's a he, hi, $hosts. I was wondering if it's possible to run a brute force attack against a wide range of encryptions, or if there's a way to identify what encryption method something is using. I'm not trying to do anything malicious, I'm just curious to know how my favorite online game communicates. Thanks in advance, Voltage X.
Just to get this out here first, El Jefe also says that the UK number is not working for him, but he's not also from the UK, I think. Also, he suddenly moved, so... We don't think the UK number works, and we will endeavor to have that fixed by the next show. As to address Voltage X's email, the wonderful thing about encryption is that you need to break it in order to figure out what the heck it's doing. Basically, there's no real way to brute force an encryption method that you don't know works, because basically brute forcing is trying every possible way of breaking it, and you need to know how it works in order to break it.
Yeah, whether it's like an AES or whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's a symmetric, asymmetric.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. What the key
length
is.
The algorithm
is,
it works and key length, exactly. So you basically need to break it in order to find out what it is in order to break it. So
chicken and the egg problem.
Sorry, you're a bit hosed. If you want to start like looking into breaking ciphers and everything, just to get this started, I'm assuming it's some type of probably symmetric cipher where basically the client knows a special key and the server knows a special key, and it's just a matter of finding out what that special key is to break the encryption. If it's encrypted in the first place, we don't know. It may just be obfuscated. It's almost definitely symmetric, as sort of an asymmetric key would be a bit of an overkill, because mostly asymmetric is two separate parties who don't know about each other, as opposed to this, where it's basically how everything works.
Yeah, pretty much.
Good luck. Have fun. Yes, and we've also confirmed that the UK number is down completely. Thank you, El Jefe. El Jefe. I can never pronounce Spanish. It's been
El
like
Jefe. Yeah, well, that's because you don't live in Southern California. You couldn't pronounce chile con carne. Okay, our next email is from the Lipo Man, and he says, "Dear H and CH, I assume that's you and me or something. Thank you for making
co-host.
Oh, host and co-host. Okay, I didn't know. Well, I don't know. I'm kind of inept at these things. Thank you for making the tour episode. Now I can surf freely and watch she-male pictures. There's something about a man with boobs that makes me horny. Stick that in me now. Oh, bang.
Yep. And these wonderful people are our listeners.
Hello, audience.
So thank you for that email, and we're glad that Tor can assist you in surfing she-male porn.
Yeah, that's kind of disturbing.
Hey, you know, that's what the internet's about. Porn wears an MP3s.
Yeah, I guess so. It takes a lot to disturb me, though, and I'm sorry. Minorly disturbing.
I could really, start pushing your buttons about this, but I'm not going to. We're going to attempt to keep this show G-rated.
Yes. Well, that's why I'm dancing around actually saying anything. All right. Next email is from G.I. Joe and says, "Hello, just a thought. Have you ever considered running a voicemail on the 8, I assume it means on the toll-free number, during the week, and gadget podcast style, so then if you aren't getting calls, you could just play voicemail questions left during the course of the week. Hugs and kisses, G.I. Joe."
Hugs and kisses.
Well, we love you too, G.I. Joe, and then I've got a bottle of lube with your name on it. But anyway, actually, I keep forgetting to turn the 800 number onto the voicemail during the week. What I really need to do is have it do some sort of time-based system where pretty much if you call during the show, it routes you to our call-in queue, and then if you call when we're not doing the show, then it routes you to voicemail. But I think the problem with that is that should we ever do a show pre-recorded, I would then have to remember not to turn that on, so you'll then wait in the queue forever during the entire show. So, yeah, I'll start doing that starting after this show, actually, and then
I believe with Asterisk, you can say, you know, If someone calls between
that bit is totally easy to do, you know, time-based reading and whatever.
Yeah.
But I just don't want it to be so that if we ever do a pre-recorded show, I'll forget to turn it on to voicemail for that particular hour of the show. Then we get people calling in and just waiting, getting angry at us and so on.
Well, that's why we always say that, hey, you know, this show is pre-recorded, we're not live, we're not taking phone calls. And
true,
if they don't pay attention to that,
I guess, but it is my account the money for the calls comes out of. So.
Excuse me, it's our account.
Okay, it's our account, but whatever.
That,
we still have to pay for it.
That was my DEF CON money too, damn it.
All right. it's coming out of our pockets, so. Our next email.
Are you going to say that it's going to be on after the show, or
yeah,
after?
It'll be on voicemail after we do this show.
Okay, so G.I. Joe can call in and leave voicemails and talk about how he loves us so much.
And then next week, two whole hours of nothing but voicemails that say "dead hooker is dead hooker is dead hookers."
Well, we have to just scan them out first, of course.
Of course.
Anyway.
All right, so this next email is from, as he claims we are supposed to pronounce it, RHNNet. "Hi, hosts/co-hosts. I really enjoy your show, but I was listening to show number 136, The Blackberry Battle, and there was some misinformation in the opening part of your show. It was said that Kevin Rose was suing dig.de/yig.de. However, in the last episode of TWiT, episode 43, that's twit.tv, Kevin Rose talks about this and says that the company has had no contact with dig.de/yig.de whatsoever. However, dig.de/yig.de said that they were being sued. Kevin says that they are just trying to get attention. So Kevin Rose did not do anything to scare dig.de/yig.de, just wanted to clear things up. Keep up the great work, RHNNet, on the bus in Canada.
On the bus. Get on the bus! Yes. Woo!
Ooh, yeah, he's either doing something metaphorical or he's sending it from a mobile phone.
I'm assuming he's sending it from a mobile phone. We don't do stuff that's metaphorical on BinRev.
No. No metaphor ever.
Yes, exactly. I found about this just before the show, and I ranted and raved about it on the show, and then the next day I expect you to know, Slashdot to pick it up, maybe CNET, and, you know, talk about how everything is horrible is happening with, you know, online trademarks and copyrights, and no one picked it up, so I started doing some research in it, and I really couldn't, besides, like a handful of English, like two or three English-speaking sites carried this. And there was a good amount of stuff on, like, a bunch of blogs in Germany about, you know, yig/dig.de. And, I mean, I translated a couple of them, and a lot of them said that, you know, oh, they are being sued, oh, they aren't being sued, but they're changing their name, oh, they're running scared. And I've never actually seen something that actually, what they say they're being sued. I've seen a lot of people say that they are being sued, but nothing actually coming from them. But as for whether or not they're making it getting attention, I really just think it's they basically dig.com did come out and basically register dig.com or the dig trademark in the European Union. I think I said like the 17th or something, and so 4 days later, this, you know, yig or dig.de changed their name to yig.de, and I really think what it is. I think that basically it was a chilling effect. And plus, you know, Kevin Rose is, you know, the devil incarnate, so. And we should all know that. Personally, I'm just concerned about the chilling effect that it has. Like, you know, if I go out and I register, I don't know, I can't really pick up a good answer. If I come out and I register
Dogball
trademark a name. Yeah, if I come out and I trademark Slashdot. I mean, can I sue them at that point, or do they have to change their name, or are they going to be scared? Or if I come out and I trademark BinRev, and I'm, you know, I want to, like, you know, take BinRev for my own nefarious needs.
Yeah.
This person has had this, well, these people have had this website for, you know, I think it was, like, since 1999 or so? They've had this website for a while, and, you know, if someone comes along and registers a name or trademarks a name, they have to change it. It sucks. I mean, what this really reminds me of is a lighter version. Well, technically it really doesn't because it wasn't actually a lawsuit, but it was, I think I mentioned it last week, the etoys.com and etoys.
Oh, there was etoy and there was etoys. I don't remember but it was years ago. eToys is the now defunct online toy shop, and eToy was like some sort of, what were they a comedy group or an art group or something like that? They
were an art group in Germany, I think, actually.
Yeah, they were German. They've been around since like the late 80s or the early 90s, mm-hmm. or some ridiculously long time. And then eToys sued eToy, and eToys had only been around since 1999 or something like that.
I want to say that 1998 actually.
Hmm.
Because they went public while I was still in college, or while I had my freshman year. It might be 1999, yeah, because, I don't know.
Hey, 1999.
Early 1999 or late 1998.
Yeah, 1999 was the year of interweb, so.
Yes. I remember all of my people on my floor, there was like two or three people who had just like, constantly was like, oh, get rich quick. Dude, if we do this, we'll just get rich. And they were like, oh my god, we need to open up all of these online, we need to open up online trading accounts and get in on the IPO. And I told them, you're not going to be able to buy this. It's an IPO. IPOs don't work like this. There's no such thing as really, you know, publicly traded stock on this. They've all divvied it all up. "Oh, yes, there is. He'll be able to buy it." I laughed when they fell flat on their face.
Yeah, but God, do you remember the good old days when you could come up with any crazy idea? You could say, "I'm going to do anything." And just as long as you threw the word internet in there somewhere, venture capitalists would throw money at you like there was no tomorrow. Remember those good old days?
No, I don't. I was in college.
And I was in high school, so...
Well, obviously, the people getting the money thrown at them from venture capitalists were not us.
Yes. But it's nice to fantasize that one could theoretically have done such a thing.
A long, long time ago.
Yes. A long time ago in the Silicon Valley far, far away.
Then everything started going south like the year before I graduated, and I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
What is this shit?
I know. No fun for us. We were born a couple of years ago.
Yep.
All right. And our final... Yeah, that's our final email, is from Smarthur?
I always kind of pronounce it myself as S.M. Arthur, but...
S.M. Arthur or Smarthur or Smart-her or Smart-Arthur or something like that. Anyway, the email is, "Hey guys, I just started listening to your show about a month ago, and I've been finding it quite enjoyable and informative. I have a question regarding Asterisk, or I guess VoIP in general, and domestic spying. It has recently come to my attention that the U.S. government monitors every international phone call and randomly, and not so randomly, monitors domestic phone calls. I was wondering if you know anything about wiretapping VoIP phone calls. Its feasibility, whether or not it's being done, and if it falls under recent admissions of domestic spying. I've been using Blasterisk," that's, now I guess you read the tiny URL.
tinyurl.com/QuebecGolfJulietJulietWhiskey.
"A lot recently to make international phone calls, and I was once just wondering about whether or not my convos are being listened to, or how easy that would be to do. Keep up the bitchin' work, your pal, Smarthur." So,
well, okay.
Let me answer.
All right, well, you go right ahead.
I'll do the tapping thing first, and then we can address Blasterisk.
Okay.
Pretty much, the deal is that if... it depends really on where your phone call interfaces with the PSTN. If it's carried as IP traffic all the way to the foreign country, and then the international gateway is in that foreign country, there's absolutely, like, almost zero chance. I'm not going to say completely zero chance, on the off chance I'm wrong, but it's pretty small, I would imagine, like 0.00001% chance that your phone call is going to be monitored. If the internet, if the gateway between the VoIP service and the PSTN is here in the U.S., like say you hit a PRI in, I don't know, San Jose or Michigan or Florida or something, and it heads out the typical standard AT&T international gateway, then it's likely subject to the same wiretapping as all the other international phone calls are. But I mean, really, if you've got nothing to hide.
Well, don't say that, because everyone will be like, "Oh,
yeah,
that's just a cop-out."
Yeah, it's just a cop-out. But still, I mean, be smart about it if you're going to talk on international calls. Don't say stupid things.
Well, really, I mean, you know, this whole...
And all, yeah. Don't let your paranoia consume you.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, of course, this Blasterisk thing is sort of run by indie media, and they seem to be having their tinfoil hats on overdrive. You're 99.9% of you are not going to get tapped. The 0.00001% of you who are calling, you know, mobile phones in Afghanistan, they might be interested in that, and rightly so, because who are they really interested in tapping? Are they interested in tapping you, or are they interested in tapping the person you're calling? So, I mean, this whole domestic spying thing is really just getting blown out of proportion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's more of a question of... No one knows what the hell is going on at this point. Basically, it's become, you know, it was one article in the New York Times... And then people said, "Okay, well, yeah, we might be doing this." And it just everyone is just sort of saying, making up as it goes along. It's that no one has any evidence yet. That's the problem. And until then, just everyone's going, "Oh," and just, you know, running around screaming and holy crap.
I'm buying stock in
anyway, this
Reynolds.
Is bordering on politics, and we won't talk about this.
I'm buying my stock in the Reynolds Tinfoil Company.
Exactly. Remember to have it shiny side out.
Yes,
because you don't want the stuff reflecting in.
No.
I was reading... Yeah, well, didn't actually someone do a test on this online, and like they proved that if you wore a tinfoil hat, it actually amplified the radio signals heading into your brain?
Yes, I think I recall reading something like that, because it's like a parabolic dish that focuses on your brain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, did you play around, and did you look at this blaster risk?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I haven't played around with it yet, actually. I've been busy
interesting.
Yeah. I've been busy with my fun project, which we'll get into in a minute.
Yes. It's interesting. I played with it for only like 30 seconds today, and it seems to be like some sort of free world dial-up clone, but not really. I mean, it seems to be, I don't know, I guess you could really just call it more like a clone of Telefreak, and like you call into this number and you get routed, and they have like numbers all over the place, like international, like they have stuff in like Boston, Fort Worth, Texas, like two or three other stateside locations. And they have like stuff all over the UK and like all over Europe too. It's pretty interesting. And you hit this menu and you apparently can dial out international for free, which was absolutely amazing. Of course, I didn't actually wasn't able to actually dial out in the first place because I kept on getting an error message. That's how I was trying to test our UK number, but failing miserably on that. And it was definitely their service. It wasn't actually the UK number failing. Like if you read it, like you know, it's they said like oh you can do this, you can do extensions, you can do voicemail, and you can control Steve's computer if you know the proper tones. And I'm just like okay, I didn't actually play with that part yet, but it's interesting. You should look into this, and if you're interested in the phones, and it seems to be at least a interesting way of dialing outside the country and making free phone calls, if nothing else.
I just ran to the kitchen and got my roll of aluminum foil.
Woohoo!
Yeah, I'm putting my tinfoil hat on now.
Well, that's good, and you're going to save yourself from 802.11b transmission.
Yes. Oh my god, brain frying! Ah!
All right.
Yes,
useless. Also, you seem to be very quiet. You do know you can like speak up at any time during this.
Welcome to Binrev, land of madness and tinfoil and good beer.
Indeed. Oh, and shitty beer is my habit.
Yeah, and shitty beer too. But I guess shitty beer is better than no beer.
Indeed. I'm going to see a lot of shitty beer this evening.
Woohoo! Just to put it out here, 888-9-BIN-REV is our call-in number tonight. Zygmunt is standing by screening your phone calls. So, useless. Since you haven't talked, we're going to make you go first. You have any fun personal hacking stories? What have you been working on lately? Have you been messing around with anything?
That's kind of a toughie. Yes. How much I'm allowed to talk about, I don't know. I work on medical equipment for a living, which is an interesting profession for a gentleman like myself. Let's see. Not a lot regarding that would be of any interest. Mostly my topic. That's pretty much it.
So you've been messing around with TiVo. Our topic tonight is hacking your TiVo. So that's what Useless was talking about. So we'll get into that later, and you better like kick back and like recline in your chair for this one. Strom, what have you been up to lately?
Oh boy, this is a fun one. Well, here's your first hint. If you go to securityfocus.com, it was the top story earlier this evening. Let me pull it up here and take a look. Yeah, it's still the top story. Report: Express Pay can be exploited for cash. I'll read you the news report. A vulnerability in the FedEx Kinko's Express Pay system allows an attacker to receive free services or even cash from the stores, according to a post on Full Disclosure yesterday. The Express Pay system uses a Siemens Infineon SLE4442 smart card to store the pre-purchase value, and a 3-byte security code prevents rewriting of the card's data. The method described for obtaining the security code involves using a logic analyzer at a point where the card is written to, and it is reported that this code is the same across all cards in circulation. The various byte ranges are described in the posting. However, the crucial point allowing this to be an issue in the first place is that the Express Pay system completely trusts the value reported by the card and does not require the database to confirm this value. Serial numbers on the card for store location may be changed to any value without consequence as well, allowing for straightforward cloning of the cards once produced. The report was sent to FedEx Kinko's by the researcher on February 19th. However, no reply has been received at this point. So the researcher is me.
Wow, how responsible of this researcher. Who is this researcher,
this
Strom?
This researcher would be the one and only Strom Carlson, unless there's some other Strom Carlson I don't know about.
Just a Strom Carlson. Didn't you know him in Six Packs?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Zaphod.
Yeah. So please tell us what exactly, if you want to give us a nice little, 5,000-foot view of what has happened. I mean, you mentioned this on an earlier episode of you were messing around with smart cards, but...
Well, pretty much, the FedEx Kinko smart cards, like the report says, they're protected by a 3-byte security code that prevents you from rewriting them. So pretty much any schmuck with a logic analyzer and knowledge of how the protocol works can pick the security code out of the data stream and then rewrite the cards. So the story is posted on Dig as well, and then if you go there, there's a photo I took. The maximum value you can put on a card with a real-life situation is $100. And I should mention before I get too deep into this that I was commissioned by Secure Science Corporation to do this research. But anyway, yeah. Go Lance James. If you haven't listened to our Lance James fishing episode, go download that and listen to it. He's awesome. So his company commissioned me to do this research. And I have a photograph of a card I modified in the kiosk, and the kiosk says, maximum balance reached, $313.37.
What made you choose that number?
I thought it would be very elite to choose 313.37, but maybe just randomness. I figured if there was a value for the card which was not too ridiculously high on the chart and yet still says I hacked this, it would be $313.37.
Okay, so just in case people don't know, what exactly can you do with these smart cards?
Well, pretty much. You can add value to them, it seems, without consequence, because they never bother to check whether or not the card has been altered. They never verify the value against the database. So you can get free Xeroxes, theoretically. You can get free unlimited time at the computers, theoretically. And you can even take the cards to the cashier and cash them out.
So basically, you can sit there and say, put $100 on 10 Kinko's cards.
Mm-hmm.
Go to 10 Kinko's around the area, because technically if you do this
at one, it'll be kind of suspicious. Yeah.
They might get a little suspicious. And basically walk out. In the afternoon's work, you can make $1,000 or steal $1,000. Let's clarify that.
It is stealing.
If you're a shady fellow, which we are not.
Yes. So, if you do that, yes, you've got $1,000 in your pocket where before there was zero.
So, wow. So, how long did this take you to do?
I started doing the research. I've been researching it on and off for a while. I got heavy into the research towards, September, October area of last year. And I finally broke it on February 8th.
You said you've contacted FedEx, and have you actually done? They haven't done anything, but have they contacted you back?
No, they never replied to our alert to them. And then so what happened actually was someone from CNET sent Lance an email and said I was trying to. In fact, let me if I pull up the Dig article about it. This is in the notes. So someone, a reporter from CNET contacted Lance and said he had called FedEx Kinko's about this. And FedEx Kinko's mailed them back and said, "Our analysis shows that the information in the article is inaccurate and not based on the way the actual technology and security function. Security is a priority for FedEx Kinko's, and we are confident in the security of our network in preventing such illegal activity." So, of course, this means that FedEx Kinko's obviously has no clue how the system works, and OnTrack, who is the company who developed the card system, is lying to FedEx through their teeth. And Lance posted, said,
"Our PR person has no clue actually how the system works."
Yes, exactly. And it's just doing something that sounds good. So Lance posts our response, and then my photograph of $313.37. So
well, look at that. You're a minor celebrity. If you get interviewed on this, you are going to pimp the show, right?
Of course I'm going to pimp the show. Wow.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah, it's got 102 digs already, and it was 57 digs before we started the show.
Well, before we started the show, it was like 17. I mean, when I checked it out, like 9:15.
Oh, really?
It was 17.
Wow. Okay.
I think. I'm not sure when exactly it was. No, I don't think I still have it up. Oh well. Yeah, but when you first sent it to me, I checked it out. It was like 17 of them.
Wow. So yeah, it was top story on security focus. I'm hoping it goes to Slashdot. Wink, wink. If
I don't know. Someone submitted to Slashdot earlier today, and nothing happened.
Yeah, well, I'm sure if they sat on it and then they said, "Oh, wait a second, this is getting a big thing," they would probably be too well to post it to cover their asses, I think. Right? I don't know.
Fork.
Maybe.
Cool.
I'm not really a regular Slashdot reader, so I don't know how the dynamics of Slashdot work.
Really, I haven't gone around and started used to religiously read Slashdot, but I haven't done that in like forever.
Yeah, I think I maybe once a week or something. I just kind of pull it up and flip through it and go, "Oh, that looks interesting." Junk, 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 junk. Interesting. Junk, 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 junk.
Well, I guess so. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's basically what I do. I don't really have more of a schedule, I guess. As for me, I assume you're done. Is there anything else you would like to say about this?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm going to be, I guess I'll pimp the talk I'm going to give. I'm going to be giving this talk at Layer 1 in April in Pasadena, and I'll also be giving the talk at, I'm going to submit the talk, I haven't sent it in yet, to Black Hat and DEF CON and see if they say yes. So, definitely Layer 1, maybe Black Hat and DEF CON.
My goodness, you know, get Black Hat, you might get busted by Cisco or something. FedEx
oh,
might
no.
come by and rip out all the stuff in the pages, rip your pages presentation out of the documents.
Holy crap!
As for me, I haven't been doing anything. I've been just doing random programming. Stank approached me with an idea, and I can't say what it is yet, but I've been programming an interesting utility that might be released relatively soon. We will see. It's cool. Look at that way. Yeah. Other than that, I haven't really been doing much. Work's been interesting. How can we say? So, our show topic tonight is, I don't know, I guess you could say TiVo hacking or TiVo modifications. How about that? Or just hardware
TiVo
hacking your TiVo.
Yeah, hacking your TiVo. I guess I might have to buy a television set after listening to this show.
Oh, yes.
Television is overrated. Actually, can you use TiVo with just, I assume you can use TiVo with just like rabbit ears or something. It's just very useless.
Well, just with rabbit ears, maybe, but you have nothing to display it on without a television set.
Oh,
thank you.
Yeah, I'm just imagining a TiVo sitting there with rabbit ears on top of it and no display device. What's it doing?
You have a computer, don't you?
I've got a computer.
Okay, well, you can watch your TiVo through your computer. You can watch it live as it's recording.
OMG.
Yeah, you can use MPlayer
for
Linux.
Sweet.
All right, so, well, useless. Do you want to take this over, or should I just start asking you random questions?
Well, I'll start out real quick with a brief thing. Everybody knows what a TiVo is now. It's rampant. Nobody buys VCRs anymore. They buy TiVos. Or if they're really cheap, they buy another DVR because they don't know what the hell they're doing.
Well, my parents bought a VCR, but we'll get into that.
I have two VCRs on my television in my bedroom, actually. That's the only place that they are.
What, do you have Rotary Phones 2 or something? Oh, wait a minute.
Actually, I do. They're in the garage, and so do you, Strom, so shoot up.
I know.
Okay. I like it when my desk phone weighs 10 pounds. That's a nice thing to me.
Hell yeah. Anyway, tangent, coming back from a tangent.
Okay. So, TiVo allows you to record television programs on a hard drive, much like you would if you had a PVR on your computer, yada yada. It records an MPEG format, an MPEG 2, and, well, one of the special things about TiVo is it also has guide lists and it automates all the recordings for you, rather than you just watching TV on your computer and going, oh, I'd like to capture this. It allows you to automate everything in a very simple user interface way. Any shlomo out there can buy a TiVo, and now they've got it working. Under normal circumstances, you buy a TiVo, you get the TiVo service, which allows you to use all of their guide information and some other features that I'll get to a little later. There are a couple kinds of TiVos out there right now. There's Series 1, which was the original TiVo. Not a whole lot on it. It's got a telephone port and some RCA outs, and that's about it. There's really not much going on in that TiVo. It records MPEG 2 and plays it back, and it's got some menus. The insides are a little different, and I'll get to that a little later. Series 2 TiVo, however, has some other features on it. It usually has USB connectors on it, which some of the Series 1s had, but you have to look kind of hard. Some of them have Ethernet ports, and there's also a third kind of TiVo called the DirecTV TiVo, DTiVos for short. And DirecTV was actually selling this as their DVR for a while. They're no longer doing it. They discontinued it. I think last month they discontinued all support, and they decided, we're not going to do anything with this because we want to sell our own, which is a TiVo in disguise without the brand name on it.
Does it have a little mustache on it, too?
No, it doesn't have a mustache.
Little mustache and glasses over the TiVo logo?
Any reference to it being a TiVo is pretty much gone.
Are you saying it's a TiVo, but just like it's unbranded, or are you just saying they're making their own TiVo thing and they're reverse engineered it or something?
It is a TiVo. Most of the TiVo software is actually open source, except for a couple of things in there. They purchased rights to use those couple of pieces of software, so they got really old versions, and they pretty much took out the TiVo name, which isn't hard to do. Once you start going into your TiVo and screwing with stuff, you can change all kinds of things. So I'm sure they were able to take out the TiVo brand name fairly easily and just bought license to use a couple of applications that they have in there, like APG Manager. And that's about all they did. They still use, I think, a masqueraded version of the old TiVo software so that you can save your programs on your computer.
Basically, if you crack it open, it's more or less identical to a TiVo.
Yeah, it's more or less like a DTiVo. Because they had a bunch of hardware, I'm sure, and they just wanted to reuse that anyway.
Makes sense. All right, so it's got this DTiVo, what do we know, USB, Ethernet, RCA out. What else does it have?
DTiVos have places to put in cable card type access cards so that they can decode the satellite information. They also tend to have, on the newer models, an RID, just like any other satellite receiver. For if you don't know what an RID is, it's a receiver ID so that your satellite company can track who the hell you are every time you access their service.
Oh, like the little smart card thingies.
Actually, it's hard into the board. The RID is hard into the board. And you
can
find it on
the back
of your desk. What you're talking about, that's kind of creepy. Yeah, the smart card that you're referring to is actually the cable card stuff, which has all the decryption information. Cable companies use it, but they don't generally use the smart card anymore. They use actual plug-in, like a PCMCIA card bus card, into the back of whatever device they're using, like the Scientific Atlanta boxes and whatnot.
Well, because those smart cards, they're unreliable.
Yep.
I know a bit about that.
Yeah. I don't know. I personally, if you set up a smart card right, I like the fact that it will eat itself if you try to crack the password too many times.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was cool. I thought that was a cool feature to have.
It's a cool feature until you actually sit there with a logic analyzer and reverse engineer all this.
So. Oh, yeah. But it was a good idea. I mean, it kept people out for a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, just sort of go off a tangent here. I mean, I think it was DirecTV. Maybe it was like Dish Network or EchoStar or one of the earlier ones. There was a large piracy movement there that basically people would basically make bum smart cards and they would clone it. And there was like a large group of people who basically had these bum smart cards who would just pull down the satellite signal for free until they actually found a way to combat them. I think they call it
Empress. I believe you're talking about the Empress signal was the first thing to do that, and they just sent an out of band signal down to a lot of the receivers and fried them.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I think it was. Well, I believe that was the first one, and I believe there was another one that happened, and it was. I think what happened was it was on Super Bowl Sunday, one of the big TV things in America. They sent out a special signal that fried all these smart cards, and basically they reprogrammed it so when you flipped your thing back on, it would just say game over on the screen. And I got to say that was kind of sucked for all the people that were stealing the signal, but I got to say that was pretty elegant.
That is an elegant hack.
That is pretty cool. I mean, and damn them for stealing, service. Damn them.
Stealing service is bad. Because that's what I have one of the questions is. That's one of those nice hazy gray areas for me personally, because you're broadcasting the signal to me, and you're saying I can't listen to it. I mean, what the hell's up with that? Unless I can say, don't broadcast this within my property, you have no right to tell me that I can't listen to the signal. And if I want to reverse engineer it and listen to it like for free, that's my prerogative.
That's what the FCC is all about.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. That's a very interesting hazy gray area, at least for me. I mean, I don't know how other people look at it, but you're broadcasting the signal to me and then saying no, you can't look at it. It's the same way of you're saying that I can't war drive. I mean, I can't listen to other people's signals as long as I'm not broadcasting to it on wireless access points. I mean, you're broadcasting it to me. I'm not talking to it. And anyway, we're tangenting. So Series 2 has these cards. And now, what is this thing that you're talking about called HMO/HME?
Yes. Series 2 TiVos have a feature on them called HMO or HME, which is Home Media Option and Home Media Engine. The Home Media Option is actually something, like this is one of those features I was talking about to buy service from TiVo from to get access to, although if you have a direct TiVo and manage to get it on there, you don't pay for it. But, yeah, that's one of those neato tricks. Anyways, HMO was basically a way to allow you to listen to MP3s and get a couple of like cool pictures from your computer on your TiVo. HME, which is the Home Media Engine, was actually a newer addition, came out a few months ago, that allows you to do a whole lot more on your TiVo using Java jar files. That's basically all it is. Is it your TiVo would hook up to your computer as a server, and your server would send out jar files of whatever program you happen to want to run. On my TiVo, I have a lot of cool things on there. I can, you know, I can listen to my MP3s, but while I'm listening to my MP3s, it shows me, you know, all the track lists, the cover art, and, you know, the band, et cetera, all kinds of information that I want to get that it automatically gets from Amazon. So whatever...
Basically, it's iTunes for your TiVo.
Kinda, only you can't, you know, you can't buy new music on there. You can do that a different way.
Well, it's the iTunes portion, not the iTunes music store.
Correct. And it's actually, I believe the HME stuff allows you to natively hook up to iTunes and use it that way. But I use a program called Java.
Cool.
Yeah, I use a program called Java HMO that actually allows me to add all kinds of features because it's got a bunch of built-in jar files. One of the things that I managed to do with it, which isn't really that big of a trick if you know where to look, is with Java HMO, it allows you to listen to streams. Now, the TiVo Series 2 on its own can listen to streaming MP3s, your regular stream format. The only problem is it has a real problem with URLs, and it chokes on any kind of a URL that has information after the port number. Java HMO had a little jar program that allows you to use a full-size URL and also get better stream quality because it buffers it through your PC. And that's actually how I got BinRev on my TiVo.
Yes. So you can listen to BinRev Radio, the DDP Hack Radio stream on your TiVo.
That's correct.
That's correct.
Got it working here.
You actually wrote a letter in about this, and that's how we found you.
Yes.
And the wonderful ball was rolling to get you on BinRev Radio.
Woohoo!
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, I love being here. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, kids, write us interesting articles, and we'll get you on the show.
Hell yeah, definitely. We're going to get flooded with all kinds of non-interesting articles. interesting. But still, send them on in. I mean, just send them on in. I mean, we're not trying to knock anybody here. So I go out, and I get my Series 2 TiVo, and,
mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's just say first, like, you know, as a normal, you know, clueless end user, well, I mean, how do I use it? What can I do? Blah, 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 blah.
Well, your normal average Series 2 TiVo that's not a DTiVo, unless you get a really cool one, doesn't end up having an Ethernet port on the back of it. It has USB ports. Now, there's a list of USB Ethernet adapters that the TiVo has drivers for natively installed into it. I think I got a Hawking USB to Ethernet adapter on mine, and it actually allows me to hook up to the TiVo service all the time and use the HMO and HME options. Your normal option would be to hook it up to a phone line, and it dials that whenever it needs to update. So,
all right.
You get yourself a USB connector, you plug it into your TiVo, and you get a whole slew of new features. From the front end, I think it's got an option to just... I forget what the label of the feature is, but it'll say something like TiVo Other Features or something like that. And you can go into your preferences and say, I'd like to use non-TiVo applications, which will allow you to use things like Java HMO, and you can run that on your computer as a little server on your home network and get new stuff that you want on there as opposed to what TiVo puts on there.
So basically you can run this program on your... I mean, this technically really isn't the end user thing. This is more like a power user thing, I assume. I mean, I'm not going to be able to tell my mom, hey, just run this Java applet and you can hacksaw your TiVo.
Well, it's actually fairly easy to use. I mean, if you plug this thing into your TiVo... Turn it on, plug it into your home network if you got a little I want to say home gateway, and your computer's on the home gateway, yeah, you just run this program. I think it will actually put its settings into the Windows firewall for you if you have somebody who doesn't really know what they're doing, like Windows users generally do.
Yep.
Then
what was that usual universal plug and pray?
Yeah.
That thing scares me to no end.
Well, it's not as bad as it sounded when it first came out. The universal plug and play sounded pretty bad, and that was scary as hell.
Well, it made some improvement, but let's not go over there. So basically, I can run this little program. I mean, I get my Kivo. If it doesn't have a Ethernet port, I get my little USB to Ethernet adapter. I plug it into my network, and I just run this program on my computer, and I can, like, push software out to it?
There's one other setting you have to change in your TiVo, and that's how it dials out. Your TiVo is normally set to make all of its calls through the telephone line, but once you plug in that USB adapter, you have another option to select, I believe it's a MAC address, will appear on the screen where you choose your connection and you say, I want to use the Ethernet connection, and you can. And boom, you've got that program running on your computer, you've got TiVo connecting to the TiVo service through your home gateway, and it's all green from there.
Hot damn.
Yeah, there's actually a large number of...
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a large number of programs that do just that and allow you to add features with HMO, HME stuff. There's one that just stopped development called Galleon. I think it was supposed to be another very pretty front-ended MP3 listening program for your TiVo.
Okay.
But there's other features that TiVo throws on there, like...
I'm going to ask you a random question here. I'm not even sure if you're going to be answering it. So I have my TiVo, and I have my USB cable in, and I'm not interested in paying TiVo's per month TiVo service, get the listings from us. Is there a way around that? Because I know there's like XML TV and XML TV2 and all those stuff that Myth TV uses and Freevo, which are open source PBRs that you run on your computer. I'm curious if anyone's actually started hacking TiVos to use that type of service so you don't need to use the for-pay one that TiVo provides.
They have, and that actually takes a little more hacking skills. You have to get into the actual TiVo operating system, change some settings, and say, hey, I don't want to look at the TiVo service. I want to look at this service over here for my guide, etc. And I want to turn off updating from TiVo. You have to tell it not to call in, otherwise it'll call in and they'll say, oh my god, you don't have any TiVo service, and it'll be kind of a pain in the butt.
Oh my god, no TiVo! So you can use that kind of stuff. Okay, this actually sounds interesting, and I may actually want to do it. We're starting to go into, power user type things here. So, you were talking about you can start playing stuff on your computer from recording TiVo through mPlayer?
Yeah, you can. If you have mPlayer on your computer, I think there's a couple of add-ons or codecs. I forget which exactly. I've been trying to get mPlayer to compile under Sigwin on my machine and having a little trouble with the newest versions. But it will play, it will stream directly from your TiVo. And your TiVo will show listings for any program that's recording, and you can download as much of the MPEG as it already has. So, being that you can stream from it, if you have decent latency from your TiVo, you can just fire up mPlayer and tell it to stream from your TiVo's stream drive. Stream drive, HTTP directory.
We can stream it while it's recording, and we can stream it afterwards. What happens if, say, I recorded my, let's say Strom recorded Days of Our Lives, because he's a big Days of Our Life fan. And,
what? yeah, me and soap operas. Let's say I recorded the Olympics.
All right. Let's say Strom recorded figure skating.
Yeah, there we go. More of TV.
Yeah, he's an ice dancing fan.
And he wants to see what's his name? John Scott Weir? Johnny Weir? I don't know. I want to see
Apollo. What's his name? Apollo Anton Ono doing the speed skating thing.
Oh, that's a speed skater.
There we go.
Skater,
he has a speed skating recorded. Is there a way that he can archive that on his computer, like convert it over to an MPEG, or suck it down to just a file where he convert it over to DivX or convert it to DivX on the fly? Is there a way that you can actually archive that, take it off the TiVo, and then save it on your computer?
Absolutely.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. The TiVo actually offers a program that they call TiVo to Go, and all it is a front end to a TiVo web service. It just hosts all of these files via HTTP, and you can go download them. The only trouble that you're going to have is you have to log into the HTTP service using your media access key, which is something that's given to you with your TiVo. It's a little number that's usually on the back or on the box that the TiVo came in. And it also encrypts the MPEG-2 files with that key, media access key, which makes watching them without TiVo a little tough. But,
is there a way to remove that encryption? Has anyone attempted to do that yet?
Absolutely a way to remove that. The encryption that it isn't really all that tough. It just screws up the MPEG-2 native codec, and it's just a little addition on the very beginning of the MPEG-2. You can usually remove that with a number of programs. I have on my machine, you can also use it with a DirectX dump. You can cut that out of the MPEG-2. But one of the things that people like to do when they hack their TiVo is remove that from being added to the file as it records.
So wait, you can actually tell your TiVo, or basically you can take your TiVo and say, patch it so that it says, when you're recording stuff, don't use this media access key nonsense, just flat out and record it straight to MPEG-2?
Yeah, you can do just about anything you want to do with your TiVo. It's
holy crap!
It's a Unix-based operating system. I think the current
Linux
kernel
based,
is,
isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's been that way since it came out.
Yeah,
right?
he said Unix-based, so I was like, well,
I'm sorry,
it was Linux, but
no, it's Linux. I'm sorry, I
no, no
have
problem,
a tendency
no
to
problem.
Slip
just...
and say the other.
All the
beans and it's all
packed. Are going,
yeah. Linus traveled and all his, followers, what have you.
Okay. So I remember. Is there any other fun things that are just neat hacks that you just want to get out here? Because you also said along the lines of DirecTV TiVos are cool, and I'm just curious why.
Okay, DirecTV TiVos are cool, and here's why. DirecTV TiVos are the only PVR that we have right now that are at a decent cost, and you can record HD programming on.
Hmm.
However, it's kind of a bitch because they're set up for satellite. So you have to hack the crap out of them to get them to work on a cable connection or just record analog programming. And you have to hack the crap out of them to get the HMO HME service on them, because TiVo was supposed to add that, never did, and has since discontinued their support for it, so they're not ever going to. So you actually have to go out and get standalone TiVo operating system and hack that so that it can work with your RID and the DirecTV service, all kinds of crazy stuff. But it's nice. It is nice that you can save DirecTV programs in HD format on your machine. So you got a leg up on just about anybody else out there.
And I gotta say, this is pretty. I mean, even for the you're talking about DirecTV with the you got to hack the crap out of them, but still they record HD, which is amazing. And while you were talking about it, I just quickly pulled up eBay and I said, wow, TiVos are actually pretty nice. I actually might scrap my idea for a Myth TV box and just pull a TiVo out and go do that. But and they're just incredibly cheap. I'm like seeing stuff that's like $25, $50. The most expensive ones I'm seeing that are going in an hour or so are like $125, and those are stuff that's all modded already.
Right, and one of the most common mods to make to your TiVo is actually to throw bigger hard drives in it. Now, from what I understand, the most space that you can get in a TiVo right now is 300 gigs. I think that's the max.
Is that the max technically, or the max?
And how much does that actually record?
That's the max of the hard drives that it will recognize. I think there's some other nicer ones. Thank God, what company is that? From Humax, that will actually support 300 gigabyte hard drives, and it has master and slave for one IDE channel, so you can throw two 300 gig hard drives in there, but I'm not sure about that. So you can get a shitload
of... So you can maximally put a 300 gig hard drive in there. What it actually does it come with? What's the highest stock hard drive it comes with?
I think 120 is the max stock hard drive that it will actually come with.
Okay, and how many hours does that usually record?
On the best quality recordings, because you can actually choose quality from within your TiVo and tell it how high of a quality you want to record, I believe it's... Let's see, I have a 40-hour TiVo that I need to mod and throw a new hard drive in. It records... something like 40 gigs is something like 12 hours of recording service.
So it'd be 300 gigabytes would be about... that's a pretty good thing, though. That would be about...
But you can always dump
your PC. You can
always dump your PC.
Exactly.
I actually have a DVD burner in my TiVo.
Actually put a DVD burner in your TiVo?
Yeah. It actually came with it. But I'm going to mod it so that I can use layer burning. It came with the... it's one of the Humax things. You can get a TiVo with DVD reader / burner in it, and you can actually just choose to save your programs as they record to DVD live.
Hot damn. I got to say, I'm actually... I remember when TiVos first came out and... they're talking. This is like 1999, 2000 when Series 1s first came out, and there's like, oh, you can put an extra hard drive in it. And I was like, oh, that's pretty good. Wake me up when you can actually export these off the hard drive so I can really look them on my computer or say toss them on my pocket PC. And I guess it's actually happened, and I completely missed it.
Yeah, you can actually do that with the Series 1. It's not as nice as the Series 2. You don't have the support. But you can do some crazy shit with a Series 1 TiVo, the ones that were around in 1999. You can actually, they sell mod cards for more RAM. They sell mod cards for an extra IDE channel, for an Ethernet adapter. You can do all kinds of crazy shit with it. Most of the hacking that you do with TiVo in general starts out with going through the COM port. You can actually just make a serial connection to it and start throwing packages onto it to say, hey, I'd like to have terminal services on here so that I can start working with my TiVo. So being that you have access. Huh? I'm sorry?
Terminal services, pretty good.
Yeah.
I was just making fun of terminal services.
Well, being that you have access to that, you can start pulling stuff off the hard drive. It's a pain in the butt through serial, but you can also, always pull out the hard drive and throw it in your Linux box, and you've got access to it.
Yes, here is a Humax Series 2 TiVo, and it just went for $72 on eBay, which I got to say is a pretty good deal, especially if you don't have to... it actually doesn't have built-in Ethernet. It looks like it has just USB, but still, that's probably
the 40-hour one like I have. It's probably just like I got with the DVD burner.
This one.
Okay. There's not a big difference in it. Hard drives are so cheap these days.
Exactly. Still, no, like, no, my main thing with TiVos was, like, I wanted the TiVo that could, you know, I could pull it down, and, like, when I had Myth TV up and running, I basically, I recorded the Venture Brothers for all of one season, mm-hmm. and I exported them off there. I assume this is legal. I'm not going to try to cop anything illegal. After I recorded, basically, they were on every night during on Adult Swim, and I recorded it for about the entire first season, and I exported over to, I exported it over to, you know, DivX, and it's all encoded, and it works fine, and I now have them all on my computer. I mean, I don't go out and share them on the internet, so it's not, you know, nothing horrible, but I recorded this off the TV, and I just converted it to a computer, and that's what I always wanted to do with TiVo, and apparently that's possible now, which is just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, as far as saving it on your computer, it's remarkably simple. You get your TiVo, you plug it into your network, and you get the TiVo to go software from TiVo, and it'll let you do that.
Yeah. All right. So now, is there going to be? We're talking about Series 1 and Series 2 here. Is there going to be a Series 3?
Absolutely. It's actually been in production for. It was supposed to be out last year, I think, and they have it again scheduled mm-hmm. to come out this year in the not too distant future. Now that one, I'm waiting. Oh God, I'm waiting for that one because it'll. Again, it's supposed to have basically all the features that a DTiVo has. It's going to have, you know, the ability to record HD format programming, as long as it comes in and is decoded natively by the TiVo itself. So in order to do that, they're having the ability to slide cable cards into the TiVo, which is pretty damn cool. It also has
Your cable box is thrown out the window, and you just use your TiVo.
That's absolutely right. You can now get all your digital programming and HD on your TiVo, and you don't have to worry about a damn thing. There's not going to be your cable company can't box stuff out, things like that. The only blockouts that I know of are actually things that you can record from TiVo, which I forgot to mention. TiVo is actually starting to do a service where they will send you movies via the Ethernet, via the Internet, and you can just watch them. You don't have to watch them live, and you'll be able to order them with your remote, just like, say, all the new digital services have.
So wait, you're telling me my TiVo will download me porn? This thing's amazing! What else can it do? I mean, seriously, if it does my dishes, I'm just buying it right now. is there a dish mod for it? Like, you know, you're talking about DirecTV. What about, you know, do your dish TV or something?
Well, I'd like to see that, and maybe I'll have one of my weirdo friends start working on a USB mod for it that makes it do dishes. I don't know.
Yeah. Super elite USB dish mod.
That's right. Lucky Best USB Dish Mod 2.0.
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, I think we covered most of it. Is there anything else you want to talk about? Or just, I mean, this just really sounds really cool. Like, I didn't know TiVos could do half this stuff. I mean, I knew it was a computer, and I knew when Series 2 came out, it had, like, Ethernet ports, and you were going, like, okay, I guess you can start doing stuff like that. At which point, I guess I just really stopped paying attention and didn't really know that all the stuff happened that I wanted. All the stuff that I wanted to happen actually did happen. I just never noticed it.
Well, it's not like TiVo was really talking about it, and the news didn't want to piss off TiVo, so they weren't talking about it either. You just kind of have to pay attention. Yeah.
I guess so. Are there websites for this? Like, is there a TiVo? I assume there has to be websites about it, but. Do you know one offhand?
Absolutely. Let me take a look here. There's TiVoTechies.com, and you can check out Freevo if you want to make your own stuff. for the TiVo HME stuff, like I said, it's open source, and there's an SDK available at SourceForge. The tiny URL is CharlieNancy42Zelda. That actually has a distro for the SDK.
So it actually, it has like the SDK, and you can actually develop all this stuff. So that's, and it's all Java-based. I remember you saying that. I just want to toss it out there. So if you don't like Java, you're boned. But basically, you know, Java was actually made for all this stuff. TiVo is what Java was made for, that and your dishwasher.
Yep.
And
well, don't forget the refrigerator.
Well, that's really... Yeah, no, basically Java was made for all your home appliances.
Yeah, I remember reading about that. It was like your kitchen was, everything was in your house supposed to run on Java.
Yeah.
Your Java fridge, your toaster.
It's actually pretty good. It wasn't like that. My toaster would take like, you know, 30 minutes for it to toast something.
Yeah, you push the toast down, and then it like takes 10 minutes just for the coils to turn on.
Hey, and if it's a Microsoft toaster, you get the blue screen. Ooh, no toast.
No,
you
get the blue toast of death.
Ooh.
No. Yeah. If it was a Microsoft one, they just burst into flames.
Then next week there's a recall, I hope. Maybe.
No, there's a patch, and then the day after that there's a patch for. All right.
Anyways, yeah, if you want to check out some of the software and you actually have a TiVo that's on your home network, you can check out the Java HMO program that I talked about, SourceForge. Can I give the URL for that? The tiny URL?
Oh, go right ahead. No, get all the URLs you want, man.
All right, it's tinyurl.com/ Zelda Charlie Thomas 3. And there's also another one that I recommend called Audio Faucet, which does what I said with showing the album covers and the track lists and all that happy stuff. And you can find that at tinyurl.com/... dang. Can't remember what a B is. No!
Bravo.
Bravo. 7. Quilt? I don't know.
Quebec.
Bravo 7, Quebec, Alpha 5. And, yeah, that seems pretty cool, but I can't remember anything from my tech support days. Oh, no.
And get your ham radio license. You'll be all set.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is, I got to say, this episode was pretty enlightening for me. And, yeah, so I'm seriously, I'm thinking about buying a TiVo as soon as I got some spare cash around, which may be a while, but still, I'm thinking about doing it. And actually, the other question I had is, I mean, you talked about Ethernet adapters. What about wireless Ethernet adapters?
Absolutely. There are actually, with the Series 2, there are a number of Series 2 TiVos that natively support wireless Ethernet adapters.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. All right, well, that was, I got to say, that was very enlightening. Everyone's going out and go out buy TiVos. Myth TV is just going to fall flat on its face. Buy TiVos
or
right now.
Myth TV
rocked too. It's so sad, but I'm like completely just like abandoning it right now. Like I saw all this stuff and said, "Oh my god, this is the best thing ever."
Hey, can I throw in a couple of things with the Series 3 TiVo?
Oh, go ahead.
Wait a little bit. In addition to it accepting cable cards, it'll actually accept 2 cable cards at a time, so you can record one program and watch something else. Yeah, so that's one of the big features for me. And instead, do you have any idea how much one of the digital cable boxes costs these days?
No, I have no clue.
They rent for, or at least I pay for mine. I pay like $4 for each one a month.
Mm-hmm.
For renting a dang cable box, and I can't even own the damn thing. Whereas I think they will rent you a cable card for about half that, for $2, so you can have 2 digital receivers in each room for the same price of having a digital box. So it's real nice.
Cool. We are almost out of time, so I think we should head into
it's a lot later than what I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
All right, do we have announcements? Oh, yeah, it's like 2,600 meetings this week, isn't it?
Yeah, 2,600 meetings this week. If you're in Los Angeles, Union Station, then Philippe's, then Denny's.
Mm-hmm. Boston, you know, Prudential Center. I actually hope to be there this time. I've kind of, you know, run up and run into all kinds of issues with my 2600 meeting over the past couple of months, but hopefully this time I will be there and signing autographs and dealing with the groupies and all that kind of stuff or something. Useless. Do you have a 2600 meeting that you go to, or?
I do, but I keep forgetting what the name of the place is. Hang on.
I don't even know where you are. Where are you, by the way?
San Diego.
San Diego.
Sunny San Diego, one of the most expensive places to live in the
country. You did mention that earlier, didn't you?
Yeah. You know, I can't remember for the life of me what the name of the pizza place is that we meet at. Oh, Regent's Pizza. There we go. We meet at Regent's Pizza. It's in La Jolla on Regent's Road. So for those of you that live somewhere in the San Diego County, that's probably your best bet.
Are there a lot of people that go to the San Diego 2600? I'm just asking questions at this point.
There's probably 25 to 30, including Lance goes to the 2600 meeting.
Awesome. Oh, so meet Lance James, friend of Strom Carlson.
Yes, and if you're going to Los Angeles, meet Strom Carlson, co-host of Ben Rev Radio.
Friend of Lance James.
Friend of Lance James, yeah.
Yes. All right, Useless, do you have any shouts?
Sure do. Okay, I want to give shouts out to Lucky225, who is God knows where now. I don't even know what city he's in anymore. But he's a dork.
Noob. Cool. Sorry.
Yeah. shouts out to Jay Brashars.
Oh, yeah.
I've had him on the show
Josh.
Before.
Good old Josh.
Yeah. And shouts to Lance James, one of the baddest motherfuckers.
Ooh. Sweet. Oh, he released badass motherfucker status. Oh, my God. That's amazing. Strom, do you have any shouts?
Shouts to Lance.